Blog Talk Radio.
Robert, are you on?
Yes.
All right, good deal.
You're a cute little son of a bitch.
All right, you guys ready?
Yep.
Yep.
All right, let's go ahead and kick it off here.
Broadcasting from Cincinnati,
you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
And we are live. Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Show, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Joe Habib. We have a great show for you today, and as always, if you want to call in or ask questions, you can call in right now at 323-870-3857. And we'll be here till about 8:30 tonight. Today, we're going to talk about the big topic. Boxing is coming back in June. Habib, I'm excited. I don't even care who fights.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because there's going to, like you said, you hit this nail right on the head. Some of the boxers aren't going to be happy with their pay moving forward with not having that live gate money coming in because we'll get into this later, but
yeah.
That's going to affect a lot of purses.
Absolutely.
For some of these guys who are used to getting paid big dollars. And if the revenue stream isn't there, then the money is going to be different, and a lot of fighters are going to be unhappy.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this shapes up.
You're unhappy with your pay, huh? Welcome to the club. All right.
Yeah.
Everybody's unhappy with their pay.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to get paid more?
Well, it's like anything else. You know, you have a job, and if the company's not doing well, then you don't get a raise.
You don't do well, right?
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to the real world, guys. All right.
You know, before your benefits used to be better, and then they start cutting stuff from you.
Yeah.
You know, it's how it is, man.
Beep. It's called the real world.
It's called friggin' the free market.
That's it.
It's called capitalism.
There you go, man.
Right.
Mike Tyson also making a comeback. We'll tell you what we know. But first, we're going to get started with the fantasy fights semifinals of the heavyweight tournament to determine who is the best heavyweight ever beat. Hands down, we're going to start it off today. Mike Tyson versus George Foreman. Beeb, I'm excited for this. We got two good ones. We got Mike Tyson, George Foreman, Lennox Lewis versus Muhammad Ali. We got ringside Robert here, who's going to break the fights down with us and tell us what he thinks. I'll tell you what, let me kick this off. I'll kick it to Robert, and then we'll go to Beeb to give us the final say.
Okay.
All right?
Save the best for last.
That's what I was thinking, too. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, Robbie. Please, Robbie.
Stop. What's the matter with you? All right, Mike Tyson versus George Foreman, our first of two semifinals here. I'm going to tell you what, through this whole competition, Mike Tyson has ran through everyone so far. I mean, two first-round knockouts, and now he's here with George Foreman. Let me tell you, I knew who I was favoring coming into the fight. But I'll be honest, it kind of changed for me. That being said, Customato, I read this. I don't know how true it is, but it definitely made me think once I read it. Customato was notorious for watching fights with Mike Tyson. Him and Mike Tyson watch fights. And the story is that Customato said of George Foreman, as they watched the George Foreman, Joe Frazier replay, you know, over and over again, they love that fight apparently. Customato said, it's suicide against Foreman if you're short and fight with a swarming, attacking style like Marciano or Frazier. Again, I don't know how true that is. But it definitely gave me pause because of all the people, who does Mike Tyson remind you of? To me, he reminds me a lot of Joe Frazier. Reminds me a lot of Joe Frazier. He's short. He swarms, you know, and that attacking style. And Customato said that would be suicide. So let's break it down, man. Mike Tyson here has the edge in speed and boxing ability. I think he's faster. I definitely think he boxes better. He's definitely defensively responsible, keeps his hands up, throws in combinations. Foreman, not so much of a combination fighter. A lot of times I notice him throwing one shot and done. That's not to say he can't throw combinations, and he doesn't throw combinations, but, you know, he not like Tyson, put it that way. George Foreman, I would give him a slight edge in power, although both guys can get you out of there. Both guys have solid chins. And when I'm thinking about this fight, I'm thinking about, you know, who, you know, because you always got to draw parallels on what fight you think, you know. What fight does this remind you of? This fight reminds me actually a lot of the first Tyson, Mike Tyson versus Razor Ruddock fight. I think it'll be back and forth. I think the Foreman-Tyson fight will be back and forth. I think both guys land murderous shots on each other. Both guys have, like, chins of granite. The difference here, let me tell you where the difference here for me would be, was at the body attack of Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson goes to the body, he goes to the head, and he's quick. He's able to get out of there. Foreman, you know, while he blocks a lot of shots, I think he's going to take a lot of shots to the body. I think Mike Tyson at the end of the day will land more shots on Foreman than Foreman will land on Tyson, just because Mike Tyson is just better defensively, better boxer, better at setting up those shots. The body attack will wear on Big George as the fight goes on. Now, Mike Tyson won't be able to put Big George away, but he'll definitely do enough to win on the cards. My guess is 8-4, 7-5, somewhere in there. My pick to move to the finals is Mike Tyson by unanimous decision. Robert, go ahead.
Well, before I make my pick, I want to say happy Mother's Day to everybody out there listening. Hope everybody had a good
day. Forget the mothers. Don't worry about the mothers. Nobody cares. Who cares about the mothers? It's Mother's Day. You know what? I didn't even drop it on the beginning of my show.
you got to be nice to Lisa, Eric. Now, come on. Okay.
Well, my mom.
But no, you had kids. Anyway, back to the fight. I definitely think Mike Tyson will win this fight because I think the style that will be used here in this fight will be a lot like when Foreman fought Muhammad Ali, because Muhammad Ali kept going to George's body and kept moving around the ring, and George couldn't handle that, you know. And of course, and remember that was in Zaire, and the temperature was outrageous. I think Tyson will continue to go to the body. I do think that they will land heavy shots on one another. You may see both of them end up going down in this fight. It's going to be one of those kind of slugfests. But I think overall, I think Tyson will wear down George. And I think Mike Tyson will win this fight like 7-5. I think Mike Tyson will move on.
There you go. Beeb, give us your pick.
Eric, you made a statement about this fight, and of course I respect your opinion. I respect everyone's opinion on this show. That's par for the course.
I'm the only one on the show, dude.
Well, Robbie's on the show. What is Robbie, a mannequin?
Just saying. I'm just, you know, I'm throwing that out there. I mean, you know.
What's Robbie look like, a mirage?
I don't know what he looks like.
Is he just here to amuse you?
Well, remember, Beeb, Eric used to refer to me as the Al Heyman of this show, so keep that in mind.
That's right.
Yeah. That's okay. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I really take issue with you that you said about this fight was you said Mike Tyson was the better boxer. Disagree.
Really?
Totally disagree. George
really?
Foreman. Let me explain to you why.
Sure.
People, when they say someone's a better boxer, they always kind of look at it as the other guy's more flashy, he's faster, he's put shots together better, or he's okay, slick from the outside. But when I look at someone, and I look at, you know, the word boxing. Boxing is more than just one type of style. And Mike Tyson was a guy who had that Joe Frazier style. It was carbon copy. Okay, if you looked at both of these guys, you would think that they were cut from the same cloth. You would think that they were twins. Now, obviously, Tyson was faster than Frazier. Okay, I thought he hit harder than Frazier. Okay, more explosive than Frazier. They're about the same size. Virtually, they were virtually identical in size, virtually identical in reach. Now, Foreman was a very underrated boxer. He had a really good jab. He had a really good jab. He had a jab which he could measure guys. He could hit them with the jab, stop them in their tracks. He could freeze guys. He could back them up, and he could disrupt guys with his jab. And he could, you know, he could set guys up behind the jab as well. And he used the jab to as a decoy and as a blinder to disrupt and just throw his opponents off track where he could sneak that right hand down the middle. So he was really, really effective at using that jab. And he had a long reach. Okay?
He did have a long reach, yeah. Sure.
And he had a way of timing guys too. Go back and watch the Frazier fight. Right? Every time Frazier went down, Foreman waited till he came up and boom. It's almost like he went up and Foreman was right there. So he knew he would basically pick up on the rhythm of the bobs and the weaves. So every time Frazier went down and lifted his head up to the left, okay, Foreman was right there to punch him on that side. And vice versa, when he went to the right, he was right there, he waited for him. So what beats speed is timing. Yeah. And Foreman just knew how to fight that style. Sort of like how Marquez knew how to fight Pacquiao.
Yeah.
When you watch Pacquiao fight all those other guys, okay, fought all those other guys, no one could figure him out and be as effective against him as Marquez was. Because Marquez just timed him. He knew what Pacquiao was going to do. And I use the comparison and the analogy. It's like getting around on the fastball. Okay? You know a guy's throwing 110 miles an hour. You start your swing a little bit earlier. Sort of like Foreman. Foreman knows that, you know, he knew Frazier was going to go down, and he knew he was going to bob to side to side. So what am I going to do? When he bobs up to that side, I'm going to be there to meet him with the punch. All timing. All timing. And when Foreman hit Frazier on the top of the head, because that's where he was hitting him, knocked off his equilibrium, boom. You can't recover from those shots. Foreman did the same thing to Ken Norton. He just had a way. But for whatever reason, Ali's style just didn't mesh well for Foreman, even though Foreman was winning the fight at the time. But he couldn't hit him in the sweet spots because Ali would always lean back away. So it was hard to really catch him in those sweet spots to kind of discombobulate him and kind of knock him off kilter. So I think Tyson would come forward, and I think he would be running into Foreman's jab. And then I think Foreman would let him in to the mid-range area, and then he would let him, you know, he would wait for him to come back up, and he'd be like, boom, boom. He would just wait for Tyson to bob into the punches, sort of like he did with Frazier. Go back and watch that Frazier fight. He had that style. He had that style down pat. Frazier was like, boom. Every time Frazier would go down, he would come up, and as soon as he came up, boom. As soon as he came up, boom. You know what I mean? Each side he went to, whether he went to the right or the left. And Foreman has a way of just shortening up those punches where you just don't see them coming. And he can generate a lot of power. We talked about
this. He doesn't need
much. You give this guy 6 inches,
yeah,
that's all he needs to generate power. He doesn't have to wind up. He just clubs with those short clubbing shots, okay? And that's all he needs. So I think that, like I said before, Foreman has a way of, like, touching guys. And when guys get close to him, he pushes them, opens up the glove, face palms them. All those things, again, will be in play here with Mike Tyson, okay? And he'll frustrate Mike Tyson, and he'll kind of bully the bully. This Foreman was a mean guy. He was a bully. He was more of a bully. He was more of a bully in his day than Tyson was in his day.
Yeah, I would go along with that.
And I think he was more durable than Tyson too. Like he took a lot of heavy shots from guys. And you know, you go back to the Holyfield fight, go back to the Michael Moore fight, go back to the Alex Stewart fight. This guy looked like a gargoyle. His face was so swelled up. And this is a version of him when he's not even in his prime.
I mean,
okay.
George Foreman never got knocked out except by Ali, wasn't it? Because Jimmy Ellis
won. Ali was the only guy to knock him out.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, Ellis won by unanimous decision.
It was a decision, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Foreman got knocked down in that.
Man.
He got knocked down in that fight, but
yeah.
He got up and he actually came on strong in the 12th round, if I remember correctly. So, and if you go back to that Ali fight, he wasn't even really hurt. He was exhausted.
Well,
he was exhausted.
You know what?
I think the heat got to him too, because I believe
I think it was the heat.
The extended training camp there. It wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of stuff working against.
A lot of stuff going on there. And,
yeah,
you know,
right.
A lot of stuff working against.
And I'm not 100% sure that he would lose in a rematch to Ali.
I'm not either.
With that being said, I think that Foreman would have Tyson's number. Just like he had Frazier's number,
yeah.
Just like he had Ken Norton's number. He just like Marquez has that Pacquiao style down pat.
Yeah.
I think Foreman has that Joe Frazier. I think he has that Ken Norton. He has that style down pat.
You got it. Huh?
And Customato hit the nail right on the head, because he saw how he dealt with that style against two other guys who had Tyson's style, who had a similar style of Tyson's. They were almost carbon copy. So, in my opinion, I think George Foreman would rough Tyson up. I think he would hit him from all angles. I think he'd work him, keep him outside when he wanted to with the jab, and Tyson would be running into jabs. Okay, and I think as Tyson, like I said, would be bobbing and weaving, and I think Foreman would be waiting for him to come back up. Boom, short punch to the top side of the head, and I think those shots would be knocking Tyson off balance. I think they would be doing a lot more damage. Those types of shots would be taking a lot more out of Tyson than maybe some of the shots that Tyson would be hitting Foreman up, because Tyson would have to be reaching up.
Right.
And he'd be losing a lot of leverage. I think Foreman's shots would have a lot more leverage on them, number one. And number two, Tyson would actually be leaning into them, because Foreman would catch, just like Foreman caught Frazier coming in and bobbing upward, and he met him with the punch as he bobbed upward. I think he'd be doing the same thing to Mike Tyson. And I think Foreman stops Mike Tyson in 7 rounds.
Whoa.
I think he stops him.
Wow.
I think he stops him in an emphatic fashion.
Wow.
Emphatic fashion.
Jeffrey DeRuin in the chat says, Beeb, don't you think Tyson can do what Alex Stewart did? Alex Stewart lost, number one, but number two.
Lost.
But number two, is that's a different era of George Foreman. Completely different era of George Foreman.
Even if he did do what Alex Stewart did, it doesn't matter. Stewart lost the fight.
Right.
Michael Moore lost the fight.
Remember, we're thinking
yeah.
of these guys in their primes, guys. We're not thinking
right.
of...
Correct.
100%.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You made a good argument, Beebe. You really did.
You want to switch your pick now or no?
No.
Robbie, you want to switch?
No, your argument was compelling, but I don't think so.
Is Robbie coming back next week, Eric?
Mike Tyson, Michael Gerald Tyson, advances to the finals.
I'm disappointed.
You would have had Tyson Fury in the finals.
Tyson Fury should be in the finals. These are two decisions right here that I am just totally against, man.
But you were against the Tyson Fury over Ali.
I think Tyson Fury beat Ali.
Remember
I'm sorry.
That? Remember that? Yeah, he was.
Oh, good Lord.
Don't you agree with me, Robbie?
No, I actually thought Muhammad Ali would win that fight.
Is Robbie coming back next week, Eric?
Too soon to tell. Babe. What's the matter with you?
Oh, wow. I thought for sure Robbie was going to pick Foreman this week. I'm shocked. I am shocked.
I'll be honest, I thought Robbie was going to pick Foreman too.
I kept going back and forth all week with these two.
Aaron Daly, thank you so much. He said shout out to Robbie, Beeb, Georgie, and Jason. So Robbie, Eric, Beeb, Georgie, and Jason. Thank you so much, my man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I guess at the end of the day, man, I tell you what, it is a close fight, and I did go back and forth. And the thing that gave me pause, and I think Beeb and I, we talked about this last week when we went off the air, because you always have an idea who you think, you know, who you think the favorite is. And Beeb was going one way, I was going the other. But when I read that quote from Customato, now, again, I don't know if it's true or not. Who knows? I mean, who knows? But he made a lot of sense.
Well, I do know.
And when you point out the Ken Norton thing.
Go back and watch, though, like when he fought Norton and he fought Frazier. Like,
yeah.
It's almost like he had those two guys' his number. Like they, no matter what they did, they could not evade his punches. You know?
The one facet, though, that if we're going to talk about Ken Norton and Joe Frazier, Mike Tyson was definitely faster than either one of those guys. He put punches together better than either one of those guys. And in his prime, was hard to hit. I think that, and I don't think, to me anyway, I don't think that George would have had the same amount of luck hitting him as he did Joe Frazier or Ken Norton, just because Tyson was very defensively responsible. I mean, he was one of the most defensively responsible heavyweights in his prime. You know, you notice his gloves always came back up. His hands were always up. He's always in position. He had that peekaboo style. He was hard to hit. He was really hard to hit, man. Could go either way.
What do you guys think in the chat, man?
Well, they agree with me, no doubt.
Those guys can overturn you.
No, I think the chat might be pretty split.
I'll be honest with you guys. Doesn't matter what the chat thinks, right? We're going forward. It's all over with the crime, baby.
Who's better, Jordan or LeBron?
Let's talk about Michael Jordan some more. Have you been catching this?
I love the first two episodes.
Everybody says they love it.
I've been recording the whole thing, man. I love it.
You know what I found out today? They're not even filming him in his own house, because he didn't want to be filmed in his own house, because he didn't want people to see his house. He wanted like privacy, right? So I guess people like friends of the producers are allowing them to use their houses to film this.
Michael is very private.
Isn't that crazy?
What a douche, man.
Like, let me ask you this. And again, I respect everyone's, you know, wishes. If that's what he wants, that's what he wants.
Whatever.
But if I see a picture of the inside of Michael Jordan's house, right, how the fuck am I going to, like, it's not like I'm going to be able to find out where he lives, right? I'm not asking you to take a picture of the street and the house number so I can go friggin' stalk the guy.
Well, like, he's wanted by Al-Qaeda.
I see a picture of the inside of your house. You see a picture of the inside of my house, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we can find each other. We don't know where each other lives. You know what I mean? I don't get that. Like, okay.
Yeah, I don't get him.
Ralph, you don't do it because when you make videos, we're watching you inside your house. That would be like you making videos, Ralph.
Who's coming to Ralph's house? Who's coming to Dawkins' house? You know what I'm saying?
Ralph, that would be like you going down the street and bringing your laptop to your friend's house and doing the videos there because you don't want people to see the inside of your house.
I know.
What difference does it make?
Who cares? Who's trying to see the inside of Dawkins' house?
I've seen it. It's a nice house.
I mean, what is he? What is he on the lam? I mean, really, what is he wanted? You know, like a whole bunch of people show up at his house, the paparazzi.
It's a nice flat.
Kevin from Chicago, did you guys watch the UFC yesterday? We sure did. We'll tell you about it. We'll give you the rundown in a little bit here. We're gonna go with the fantasy fights because Robbie's got to get out of here pretty soon. He's got work to do, baby. Robbie's got his own show to produce. He's doing it large now. Robbie Dunn made a come up. He's doing it large now. Lennox Lewis versus Muhammad Ali, the last semifinal here. All right, Robert, give it to me.
Well, this is a very interesting fight, and I'm trying to think about this is another one. This fight could have gone either way, but I think overall this is going to be a very close fight, a very tactical kind of fight, but I got to be honest with you. This one was very difficult because I think that it'll be tactical. They'll go back and forth, and I think they'll put even shots on one another, and it'll be defensive throughout. But let's see the way we. I think overall, I think after 12 hard-fought rounds, I think Muhammad Ali will pull out a split decision here. I think Lewis is going to cause him problems because of his size and his reach advantage, and I think Ali's going to have some spots in the fight where he's going to have issues trying to get inside. And I think that Lewis is going to, you know, be able to show how good he actually is. But I think overall experience is going to take over, with Ali being a title holder much longer. And I think experience wins out in the end. And I think Muhammad Ali wins a split decision here over Lennox Lewis.
Wow. Split decision from Muhammad Ali. Wow. Yeah.
And this is another one I had difficulty with this week.
These are both fights here are tough fights. You can't really, you know, can't really fight either way you go. Either way you go.
Because let's face it, you love all four of these guys.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. All right, Beeb, give us your breakdown.
Okay. Well, Muhammad Ali, nicknamed the greatest for a number of reasons, not just what he did in the ring, but what he did in life. And that will never be forgotten, and it will always be remembered how great of a human being he was, not just a boxer. So that goes without saying. But as time goes on, fighters get bigger, better, faster, and stronger. I think you've said that before, and I think I've agreed with you on
sure.
a numerous amount of occasions. Ali, very fast hands, fast feet, good fighter from the outside, but really didn't have a left hook, really wasn't a good body puncher, really didn't fight well on the inside. And a lot of times what he would do was he would lean straight back away from shots. Did a lot of things technically wrong. Guy got close to him, he would grab him on the top of the head and try to pull him down and get him in like kind of like head modified versions of headlocks. And he would, you know, try to grab him from the back of the head and pull them down. Did a lot of hitting on the back of the head. Did a lot of open hand slapping type stuff. But that being said, though, you know, he's still good at what he did. He was effective at what he did. And in his prime, he was just so blindingly fast. He just knew how to gauge range so well. He knew how to just continue to just move away from guys, circle guys, and just keep them chasing him, and they couldn't get near him and touch him. But here's the thing. You got a guy in Lennox Lewis, 6'5", 84-inch reach. He had a 6-inch reach advantage over Muhammad Ali. This was a guy that had a great jab. Okay, he had a dynamite right hand. Okay, and even though he lost those two fights to Oliver McCall and Haseem Rahman, we saw what he did with put them in the rematch. Now, you could argue that maybe he took them lightly the first time around. He probably didn't get up for those fights, so regardless of whatever the reason he lost those fights. But every time he had a lot, you know, a really top-level guy in front of him, that's when Lennox Lewis shined. And if he had Muhammad Ali in front of him, he would definitely bring his A game. I don't think there would be a lapse in concentration or focus against Muhammad Ali. Okay? There's no question about it that he would be ready for Muhammad Ali. So Muhammad Ali, not a really good inside fighter. Guy that would be, you know, try to move. But again, you got a guy who's got an 84-inch reach, who had pretty fast hands himself, had pretty, you know, fast feet himself, decent foot speed himself. A guy who was 6'5", and we know that Muhammad Ali fought a guy in Ernie Terrell, I think that was 6'5", 6'6", but you can't compare Ernie Terrell to Lennox Lewis in terms of athletic ability and just raw talent. So Lennox Lewis was a natural athlete. He was a tennis player. I think he played, English football. He was an athlete. Was an athlete. He played chess. This guy could do a lot of things. This guy could do a lot of things. He was a natural athlete, okay? So with that being said, you know, Muhammad Ali, I think, would try to lean away from Lennox Lewis, but I think with that reach, I think Lennox Lewis would still be able to touch him with the jab. I still think he'd be able to touch him with a jab. And then if Lennox Lewis could fight a little bit on the inside, too, when he got with Emmanuel Stewart, he learned how to, like, you know, throw those short hooks on the inside and those short uppercuts on the inside as well. And Lennox Lewis was a physical guy. You saw what he did to Mike Tyson. Like, when Mike Tyson got close to him, how he shoved him and kind of bodied him a little bit, pushed down on him a little bit. And Mike Tyson couldn't really get inside and rough Lennox Lewis up because Lennox Lewis wasn't having it. So if Lennox Lewis got close to Muhammad Ali, pinned him up against the ropes, and Muhammad Ali would try to grab him behind the neck and pull him down, I don't think he'd be able to do it because Lennox Lewis would have the height advantage. And Lennox Lewis, was a physically strong guy. He was a guy that you really couldn't move around physically. He was hard to move, that guy. He knew how to use his weight when he had to, okay? So I don't think Muhammad Ali would be able to grab and hold and contain Lennox Lewis because Lennox Lewis was a physical specimen. He was just a real strong guy. And I think Lennox Lewis, could fight better on the inside than Muhammad Ali. I thought he had a wider array of punches than Muhammad Ali as well. He could go to the body. Like I said, he could shorten up hooks. I think he could throw uppercuts on the inside. And I think that Lennox Lewis could lay some heavy leather on Ali. And I think, he would take a lot of starch out of Ali as the fight wore on, because not only would he hit him with those telephone pole jabs that would be snapping his head back as Ali would try to lean away from him, and Lennox Lewis would just take a half step forward and boom, and be popping that jab in his face, I think he'd be able to sneak that right hand in there a few times too. And the thing with Muhammad Ali was he really didn't have a good left hook. He was a 1-2 type fighter. As blasphemous as that sounds, there just was a lot of things that Muhammad Ali did not really do well. He wasn't a good inside fighter. wasn't really a body puncher. Didn't have a good left hook. He was mostly a right hand dominant heavyweight. He was a right hand dominant heavyweight, really. So with that being said, I think Lewis would be able to control this fight with his jab. And then when he wanted to step in, I think he could lay some heavy right hands on Muhammad Ali when he decided to become aggressive. Because the thing about Lewis is he was kind of methodical. You know, he would stop the fight out in a methodical way the first two or three rounds. But then once he started getting loose and started feeling good and getting his rhythm, that's when he started stepping up the tempo a little bit. And he knew when he stepped the tempo up, he knew how to, like, finish guys. He knew how to get guys out of there. We saw in the Mike Tyson fight how he kind of fought that fight methodical in the beginning. And then Emmanuel Stewart said, "Look, man, this guy's ready to go in there and take him out." And that's what he did. So I think as this fight would wear on, I think Lennox Lewis would kind of get more confidence. He'd feel stronger, knowing that he could touch Muhammad Ali when he wanted to, because all Muhammad Ali would be doing was trying to, like, lean away. Then he'd be trying to grab him, and he wouldn't be able to contain him. I think as the fight went on, I think Lennox Lewis would be building up confidence. And I think that because of his reach and his size and his strength. I think he would kind of out-muscle and out-work Muhammad Ali. And I think Lennox Lewis would win a decision. I think he would be landing the better quality punches. And I think he would frustrate Muhammad Ali. And the thing about Lennox Lewis is if you couldn't hurt him, you weren't gonna outbox him. He was never outboxed. If you couldn't hurt him and knock him out, you weren't gonna outbox him. He was just a hard guy to outbox because he was just so well rounded. He had a lot of weapons. And Emmanuel Stewart made him a much better fighter. He really did sharpen him up and added a few wrinkles to his game. Muhammad Ali was the same guy. Like, you know, Muhammad Ali, once he couldn't move like he did in his prime, he became easier and easier to hit. And, you know, in the first half of his career before, you know, those 3 years were taken away from him, the only really tough guy that he fought was Sonny Liston, and Sonny Liston was on the other end, you know. But then, you know, we saw Muhammad Ali have real tough fights against Norton, real tough fights against Frazier. And I think he'd have a hell of a tough fight against Lennox Lewis, and I think Lennox Lewis would outbox him. I just think they had too many weapons, too big, too strong. And Ali may have a little bit of edge and speed, but it wouldn't be enough to really separate the two guys, in my opinion. So I'm going with Lennox Lewis, 12-round unanimous decision.
There you go. He said Lennox Lewis is going to the finals. Robert, what do you think of Beeb's breakdown?
I think it was very good. And
thank you, Raphael Dawkins.
Thank you, Ralph.
Yeah. It would be a very interesting matchup in the corner. Of course, we saw that when Leonard and Hearns fought, but Angelo Dundee in one corner, Emmanuel Stewart in the other corner. The strategy during this fight would be amazing. It'd be amazing to hear both of those corners go at it during a fight like this.
Very good, very good. And Beeb, I can tell you what, I agree with you 100%. When you said that without Emmanuel Stewart, Lennox Lewis is just—he's just a plain fighter in the sense that like he doesn't improve, nothing happens without Emmanuel Stewart. I really believe that. I really, really believe that because he really took him to another level.
Yeah, you could see it. You really
100%. The development after two or three fights with Stewart, and when he goes on that run. I mean, Manny Stewart loved big guys.
Yeah.
Whether it's Klitschko, whether it's, you know, Lennox Lewis, Tommy Hearns, he liked big guys. He knew how to train tall fighters. He knew it. He knew that's what it was, man.
And he's the only boxing trainer around that could do that. There is no boxing trainer today that could successfully train a tall guy. I mean, Let's be honest about it.
Who did Robbie pick?
What's that?
I took Ali.
Would you take Eric? Ali too?
No,
I didn't take anybody yet.
I didn't do it yet. Okay, I'm sorry, Eric. I couldn't remember who went first. I'm getting a little anxious.
Everybody's excited here, Beeb. Everybody's excited. And for good cause. Lennox Lewis versus Muhammad Ali. For me, I feel like this, just like with Robert, this fight can go either way, man. Both guys can box, obviously. They can obviously box pretty well. Boxing ability here, I believe, is a push. You can say, I mean, listen, man, you can say that even if we give the edge to Ali or give the edge to Lennox, I think it's a slight edge. So I think either way it goes, I think it's a push. Speed. Definitely has to go to Ali. I think without question, Ali was much, much faster than Lewis. Much faster.
Okay.
stamina to me is also a push. I think both guys can go the distance. They can fight round to round. I don't think that's a problem. It's a pretty even fight. It really is. It's a pretty even fight. However, the one caveat I see here, and it's something that nobody can deny. All right, even in his prime, Lennox Lewis was KO'd. He was KO'd by Haseem Rahman, and he was KO'd by Oliver McCall. Through his career, the one thing you can point to is he had a questionable chin.
Yep.
I can think of better qualities. I can think of better qualities to have before going in the ring with Muhammad Ali than a questionable chin. Not something you want. I think the speed of Ali will bother Lewis throughout the fight. Lennox, to me, has never fought anybody with this type of movement. Now, listen, that's not to say Lennox Lewis isn't competitive. I think he's very competitive in this fight. I think he wins rounds, just not enough. I think the more Lewis falls behind, I think the more he's going to have to take chances. Because I think he's going to fall behind in the later in the fight, he's going to fall behind here. Ali's movement is going to be too much for him. The lateral movement, and Lennox will catch him with jabs. Lennox was typically on big fights. You know, you look at big fights, he's a safety first guy. He is. He's a safety first guy.
Methodical.
He falls behind, he's got to go back to that corner with Emmanuel Stewart, who's going to tell him to go for broke. You know, because Emmanuel Stewart's not going to play with him. You saw what he did in the Tyson fight, and he was winning that fight easily. Manny's going to be on him. Lewis is going to have to open up. He's going to have to take chances. And to me, when he does, that's going to be when Ali catches him and eventually puts him away. My pick to move on to the finals is Muhammad Ali by 11th round stoppage.
Oh, come on.
So we have Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson next week for the finals.
For the finals.
Come on. This is hard.
Oh, stop it, Beebe. Stop it.
Well, one good thing about it is because we already have, they have someone, two guys that never fought each other in the finals.
Yeah.
That's what we wanted.
Yeah, I mean.
Should have been Lewis and Foreman in the finals. That's a way better finals.
No, it's not. That's
Come
not
on.
A way better final at all. Oh.
Jesus Christ. Listen to this. Tyson's in the finals. This is how fucked up this. Holyfield beat Tyson. He's not in it anymore, right?
It's the way
Lewis,
the bracket lays
Lewis,
out.
Lewis beat Tyson. He's not in it anymore. Two guys that beat Tyson are eliminated, and Tyson goes to the finals.
They didn't fight him. That's the way the bracket shakes out.
This is crazy.
You are the biggest sore loser that I have ever met in my life. You're even worse than me, if you can believe that. What's the matter?
Couldn't it have gone the way I wanted it to go? I had this already set up the way this should be played out, and you still bring Robert back because you called him up before the show. You called him up before the show, and you coerced him. You coerced him into
thinking
you did.
Nobody coerces me into anything.
I'm checking the phone records. I'm going to check these phone records. I know you called them before the show. I know you did it. I know you did it. This is a conspiracy. This is a coup d'etat.
Logan Wolf, thank you, my man. He said Eric sounded like Trump while explaining his pick. I'm watching too many of those press conferences.
Oh, my.
I just need the hand gestures, hand gestures.
You get Dr. Fauci on the show.
Dr. Fauci. You've been talking about that for weeks. Dr. Fauci. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God.
All right. Good stuff, guys. Good stuff. Robert.
Yes.
We got to let you go to the other show, man. Any final thoughts here?
You guys were talking about how boxers are going to be unhappy with their pay with no audiences. Do you think that promoters will go to the pay-per-view option to make up for some of these differences? Taking into account that over 33 million people are out of work. That's why I'm curious. I'm not going to be able to hear this, obviously, till later. But that's why I'm curious how the $60 UFC did last night because of so many people being out of work. I wonder if boxing is going to have to go to more pay-per-view options to make up for the differences with no live gates.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Well, let's answer, well, when we get to that topic, we'll answer it. And then, so just stay tuned or whatever. When you listen to it, we'll answer that question. How about that?
Okay. But, no, guys, and
all right,
I'll,
awesome.
I'll look forward for the finals next week, and I'll be here. And it's good to be with you guys. Have a good show.
All right, man. You too.
Robert,
thank you.
Don't
see
pick
ya.
Up the phone if Eric calls you.
Don't pick up my call.
I don't want you guys.
We're in cahoots. We're working together.
I want you guys talking about this matchup together. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to give you a call this week.
Yeah. I want to send a couple guys over your house this week. They can explain my pick to you.
Oh, God.
Oh,
good
my
stuff,
goodness.
Good stuff,
man. A lot of fun. I think we got the two best heavyweights on the planet. I really do. I think we got the two best. Tyson and, you know, if we had to seed the bracket out, I think that would be 1 and 2. I really do. I think that would be 1 and 2. There's flaws in everybody's game, but, yeah. Thought it went all right, man. We're down to the finals, B. How about that?
Okay. You made it.
All right. Hey, let's talk about this, man. All right. So UFC 249 took place last night on ESPN+. Okay. So I want to talk about this for a little bit here because this is crazy. Because 24 hours prior to UFC 249, Jacare Souza, and if you don't follow MMA, just to let you know, he's a pretty big deal. He's a pretty good fighter and everything like that. Top-level fighter, tested positive for COVID-19 24 hours before the fight. He was pulled. Uriah Hall, who was tested, was not positive, was supposed to fight Jacare, sent home or whatever, I guess. His cornerman tested positive. Souza's, that is, were tested positive. This is the danger of this stuff, man. And you're bringing all these guys together – you know, and you say, well, I mean, and who did he talk to? You know, he talked to some of these people, you know, I mean, they came in contact with him, and now it's going to be, you know, listen, man, I hope everything came off without a hitch last night. Okay. I hope they took care of it. Jacare, you know, and they took care of Jacare. I know they sent him home or whatever and everything like that. I get it. But how does this bode if more people get it? That were at that state, you know what I mean? That were at the event last night.
I got a good question for you.
Sure.
So they look pretty good in the fact that they're testing everybody and they caught people. They didn't catch people like it was a drug test. Let me rephrase that. They tested everybody and they identified the people who were positive and they pulled them off the card right away. But like you said, those guys were doing press conferences. They were doing stuff all week, and they did interact with everyone else. Now, those guys tested negative, but how long does this virus take to show up after exposure?
Well, when did they test negative? You know
exactly.
What I mean? Like, when did he come in? Did he just did they all get one test when he came in?
Exactly.
He drew the short straw and tested positive?
Because this is the dilemma with testing, and if you've been watching the coronavirus press conferences with President Trump, and you've been listening to Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx, what they had said was, you know, testing is great, but it's not the end all, it's not the be all end all, to it's not a 100% fail safe to this, because you can test positive, or you can test negative one day, and then a day later test positive. So unless you're testing someone every single day, you don't really truthfully know if they're positive or if they're negative. So to your point, how many times were these guys tested?
Well,
I don't know.
And John Doe brings up a point. He said both fighters got paid. His cornerman tested positive as well. He said all fighters were tested after the fights as well. What if they tested positive after the fight?
Well, what if they test negative after the fight, but then 3 days later or 4 days later they end up having it? Because again, I don't know a lot about this virus. I don't think a lot of people do.
Right.
There's a lot that we're still learning. My question is, after exposure, how long does it take for this virus to develop in your body, in your system?
Right.
That's the question.
Well, yeah,
but,
I mean.
But they had a, you know, a system in place. People tested positive for the virus, and it was identified, and they were pulled off the card. Now, again, we don't know how often, I guess before the fight and after the fight, but, like, moving forward, we still don't know what's going to happen a week, 10 days down the road. Will these guys these guys were exposed to the fighter who tested positive in the corner, men who tested positive. I'm sure they were all at the press conferences and stuff and doing promotion for the fight.
Yeah, there was
There was exposure. So technically, all these fighters, even though they tested negative, they still should have been quarantined because Dr. Fauci was exposed to.
I read about that. Yeah.
He was exposed to the virus, even though he tested negative. He's still quarantining right now as a precaution, because that just tells you right then and there, there's not 100% knowledge of how long this virus takes to manifest in somebody's system. So it's clear. I think it would be an accurate statement to say that a great deal of people that were on this card and involved in this card were exposed to this virus. So whether or not they tested negative after the fight,
yeah.
is that an accurate description on their status? Could 3 days later, 4 days later, 5 days later, they end up testing positive because of the exposure that they were subjected to during the promotion of this fight? It's a good question.
Well, you know, John Doe said fighters and journalists were tested each day in the hotel, which I'm inclined to believe.
So people were being tested every single day?
No, I wouldn't think. And you know what? I tell you what, I was talking to my sister-in-law today, and as everybody knows, she's a doctor. She said that test is just miserable. It's completely miserable. They take that swab and they shove it up to your nose. I mean, way up your nose. I mean, like, real far. To the point where you probably wish you did have coronavirus and to go through that test again. You know, I mean, that test suck. You know, it sucks, man. So
yeah.
I know I wouldn't want to get that test. I mean, whatever, but,
yeah,
you know. So I can't imagine people really going through that on a daily, you know, I don't know, man. But, yeah, like I said, Jacare was probably there doing media. They were probably there, you know, and I got everybody's face covered, and I think they had a virtual media day, if I'm not mistaken. So I get it, but he's still coming in contact with people.
Oh, so they had a virtual media day. So
I believe they did. I believe they did. But that weigh-in, that weigh-in was open.
Yeah, the weigh-in. As I'm saying, so at some point,
right?
He made contact with them.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the thing, man. That's the worst part of this whole thing is that, like, you know, we've got a guy here who may have infected a bunch of people over there.
And they weren't social distancing either. Like, Joe Rogan refused. He refused to. He was instructed to do the interviews from six feet away or whatever. He refused to do it.
You know, I mean, well, if he comes down with it, he comes down with it. What can you say?
Yeah.
But this is my issue. This is my issue with the whole thing, though. You know, the fact that, you know, this guy, you can't. There's no way to really control it. You know what I mean? There's no way to really control it. And the problem is, you know, I'm not really worried about the athletes getting it. Although, listen, man, we've seen, you know, 40-year-olds hospitalized, 40-year-olds and under hospitalized. Anybody, it can take anybody at any time. They're in pretty good shape. I gotcha, you know, and they're probably going to be able to weather it. What about the athletes' parents? What about the families? What about that's what you got to worry about. That's what everybody's got this tough guy approach. Listen, man, it won't affect me. Even if I get it, great. It might not. What about your aunt? What about your grandmother? What about your father? What about your mother? You know what I mean? That's what you have to think about.
And an interesting statistic about the infections in New York was Governor Cuomo came out and said that, like, I think like 78% or 80% of the people, the recent infections were from home. They were home.
How's that even possible?
Well, I mean, again, like, it's like,
I don't know.
There's just,
This thing is crazy, man.
Yeah, in my opinion, this thing is just – no one really understands this. And I think my stance on this was, you had to lock the country down for a month just so the hospitals wouldn't get overwhelmed.
Right.
But to a certain extent, this thing is going to run its course no matter what you do.
Oh, yeah.
You can slow the spread, but you can't stop it. At some point in time, I think we have to protect the vulnerable, stay away from, like, the nursing homes and stuff like that. But here's what another crazy thing Governor Cuomo was doing was he was sending nursing home residents that had coronavirus. He was allowing them to go to nursing homes that didn't have people infected. While he had the Javits Center there, while he had the ship there, I thought the Javits Center was supposed to be for coronavirus patients. So he was making these nursing homes take these coronavirus patients, these elderly people. That's lunacy to me.
Mm-hmm.
So the big thing for me was just to, you got to protect the vulnerable. But there's a lot of people that, like the athletes and stuff like that, yeah, I mean, They'll weather it and stuff like that, but like they're gonna have to be smart too. Like they can't go around elderly people, But the problem is, like you said, if you live with an elderly person, then your mind frame and your approach to this is gonna be a lot different than someone who doesn't,
All right, KDDR 7989 says, the biggest question I have is, if COVID-19 is so contagious, why does the test require them to shove something so far up your nose? Can't they just swab the tip of your nose? This is interesting, because I asked about this today. And news, of course, coming straight from the doctor herself. She told me that they do that because that's where they can get definitive proof. That's where the virus is. They have to go back that far in order to get the but now she said that there is swabs where you can go like inside the nostril, not nearly as reliable.
Oh, they're not reliable.
Right,
okay.
They're not near.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of false positives, et cetera. There's a lot of false negatives too. And a lot of people have gotten like false negatives thinking they can't get this again, whatever it is, and then boom,
I mean, what do you think, Eric? Do you think that what we're doing right now we should continue to do and just not reopen the country, or what's your take on all this right now?
I think that like certain places are moving too fast. I think places like Georgia, who were opening movie theaters and stuff like that, are probably moving a little bit too fast. I think, like Ohio, I'll give you an example, like what we're doing here. On the 15th, they're going to open like barbershops, stuff like that. They're going to open restaurants. And I believe you can actually dine in the restaurants. However, what they're going to do is they're going to have a limited seating in the restaurants. So you can go in and sit down, but you're going to be distanced from everybody. You know what I mean? They'll be a good distance away. So they're going to move restaurants like outside and stuff like that. And that's great. And I think that's good. And I think that will help for sure. But my thing is, can a restaurant sustain this?
Yeah.
Can companies and businesses sustain all this? I don't know.
Now, the people that tested positive in the UFC, were they all asymptomatic? Or?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so.
They didn't have symptoms, right?
Yeah, Jacare, from what I was told or from what I read, didn't have any symptoms.
Yeah.
I don't know about his corner or anything like that. I know they tested positive too. And I don't know. I mean, you think about how are they going to do gyms?
Yeah.
I mean, gyms are like the not the filthiest. I mean, gyms are clean. I get it. But there's sweat over the machines and some. I get that they clean them up. But
yeah, Planet Fitness, that gym is so clean. Like people are wiping stuff down constantly.
Yeah, but what happened? You got the guy who wipes it, but maybe doesn't spray it. I don't know. I don't know.
I'm just going by experience. Their people are like really, really clean. They spray it before they go on it and after they go leave it. And then the staff sprays it too. It's like crazy. The USDA's in there.
But what are you going to do? What do you do about boxing gyms? What do you do about MMA gyms, the jiu-jitsu and stuff? Well, we got to grapple. where, you know, we're going to go to the floor, where I got that guy, you know, you grab that guy and you put him on the floor, then what?
Yeah.
And then you're close in, because it's not like you just wrestle one guy. You're wrestling multiple people, you know?
Yeah.
As soon as the 5 minutes go, you go to another guy. You know, so
you know, it's like half the country wants to open up, and there's a good amount of people that don't want to open up too. It's like 50. It's almost like 50-50.
It really is.
I'm just gonna be honest about it.
It really is, and I mean, everybody's going nuts. Everybody's getting punchy.
I can't stand it, man. I can't stand it.
You know, I mean, but I don't know.
It's driving me crazy.
Bottom line is, you know, I think we still got to be safe about it. You know,
I want to get my teeth cleaned. I want to get a haircut.
Yeah, right. I want to get a haircut, you know? I mean, it's crazy. It's like it's one of those things, man. But you don't know what to do. You don't know what the best course of action is. And the good thing is you and I don't have to, you know, really decide that. But the thing is, it's just it's hard. It's a tough decision either way.
And you and I are both working right now. But
yeah,
imagine if we were one of the people that were not able to work because of this. How would we feel?
Well, I mean,
and you have a family.
Listen, man, I mean, that could happen any day now for either one of us, if you think about it. I mean, you know, government's calling for, you know, different things. You know, everybody's, you know, in that same boat where, you know, maybe you could sustain for a while, but then you're going to look, you know, it's business. You have to cut somebody. You're going to have to make do. And, yeah, that's on everybody's mind. You know, that's why everybody's talking about the stimulus and, you know, everything like that. And that, I think, we were talking about that new bill that was proposed about the $2,000 a month or whatever until this whole thing ends.
But here's the thing. The Family CARES Act, this pandemic, the pandemic relief bill, mm-hmm. Family CARES Act, these people are collecting unemployment, right? But then they're getting an additional $600 from the pandemic relief fund. So a lot of these people are making more money to not work than to work. And a lot of them may not want to go back because of that. That's one thing that they were talking about that could be a potential problem down the road.
That's a fair point. But, you know, I mean.
But again, when you're not working, do you still have your health insurance? You lose a lot of stuff by not working, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'd rather work than not work, put it that way.
I'd rather work, yeah, me too.
For sure, man. I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, so this is kind of the deal you run when you with sports. And the other part of this is, too, you know, they were talking about fall sports. And, okay, so if those kids don't go back to college, there can't be any sports. Any college sports.
I think
know?
College sports are done.
Well, we don't even know if we're, you know, like, I don't even know if the kids are going to go back to school in the fall. Who knows? This whole thing is up in the air, man. It's just up in the air, so you don't know. And then, you know, they talk about this thing may be seasonal, too. It's going to mutate. It's going to come back. I mean, so we got to learn to live with this thing, you know. And I don't know, man.
This is bananas, though.
Altering, man. It's a life-altering thing, for sure.
Excuse me.
All right, but let's talk about, I'll tell you what, let's get back to the fights here. Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson. This was the main event. This card was stacked, man. This was really stacked. The main and co-main were really good fights. Justin Gaethje wins a fifth-round TKO over Tony Ferguson in a very one-sided fight. I was really surprised, man. Tony Ferguson, he didn't look good in there last night. He looked slower. He looked it was one of those things. He just didn't look great, man. It just wasn't his night. Justin Gaethje looked as good as I've ever seen him look. Tony Ferguson, you know, you kind of wonder if the weight cut got to him. He had to make two, you know, he said he made two weight cuts for the Khabib fight. I don't really care, I'll be honest with you, because I don't believe he didn't have to make the weight cut for the Khabib fight. Because it wasn't that close. He made the weight cut because he wanted to make the weight cut. Not for any other reason. You know what I mean? So the fact that you went and made a weight cut and then you went and made another one, listen, man, you can't blame anybody for that. Can't blame anybody. That's your own fault. That's your own fault. Katie Doctor, 7989, thank you so much. We appreciate it. He says, thanks for the show. Can't wait for boxing to be back. UFC 249 gives me some hope at least. Hopefully we get at least one big fight this year. Yeah, I'm with you, man. I tell you what, I would hope so too. And then for the co-main here, Dominic Cruz versus Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo stops Dominic Cruz in the third round. This was a good fight. I was surprised. You know, I remember Dominic Cruz, you know, 5-6 years ago, and he's been off for quite a few years now. JC, no, Tony did not get the KO. Justin Gaethje got the KO, beat Tony Ferguson. But Dominic Cruz was so good back in the day. He had that footwork. And I tell you what, man, I mean, Henry Cejudo just made him look like he was stuck in mud. Henry Cejudo looked really, really good last night. Took him apart and ended up stopping him. I couldn't give Cruz a round in that fight. And it wasn't surprising that Cejudo won. Kind of expected it because, you know, but Dominic Cruz looked a little older last night. He looked like, you know, he had slowed down for sure.
Slowed down.
Shocker of the night, though, after Henry Cejudo won the fight, he announced his retirement right there in the ring. It was like, what is going on? He just announced his retirement. So, crazy, man. Triple C.
Went out on top,
yeah.
Great win, too.
Yeah. He actually said he thinks he can make the Olympic team for wrestling again. I mean, he's got a gold medal. Why not? I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was the UFC card last night. It was good. It was good. All right, so let's go to our news and rumors here. This is interesting. So Beeb sent me this today. Bob Arum states that boxing will return in June. In an interview with ESPN, Bob Arum stated, "We are coming back in June. These will be shows that will be on ESPN and ESPN Plus. They will take place during the week and on weekends." Said they'll all be top fighters, really top fights. Will there be a Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder? No. But there'll be some of our top fighters like Jose Ramirez. He'll be in the mix. Teofimo Lopez, Shakur Stevenson, all of them. In other words, the fights will be similar as the fights we've been putting on ESPN and ESPN Plus. Now the fights, will not have a live audience there. Bob Arum alluding to that, saying, hey, don't kid yourself. For the rest of the summer, there won't be a crowd. He says, I don't anticipate now. I don't know. He said, being able to do fights with any kind of crowd till the fourth quarter of 2020. So it doesn't sound like, they're going to be doing anything with a crowd-based anyway until 2020. Yeah. Now, Robert had a real good question. He says, well, do you think they'll be putting on pay-per-views to supplement for the live gate? I think it depends. you know, the Teofimo Lopez, Lomachenko, yeah. Teofimo Lopez Lomachenko, I imagine that moves to pay-per-view now if it wasn't already. I imagine that goes to pay-per-view. But, you know, listen, you're going to have a hard time selling pay-per-views when top fighters are not going to be fighting. You know, like you said, Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder, that can't take place because of the gate, you know.
Well, here's another problem. I don't know if you read deeper into that article, but Terrence Crawford was on Twitter saying that, you know, he's gonna be fighting for the same amount of money regardless. Like, he wants to make the same amount of money without a live crowd that he did with the live crowd, because apparently he was getting per his contract,
sure,
according to what he said, was he was getting a portion of the gate. He's getting a portion of the live gate. And he was saying that he expects to get paid the same amount that he did without fighting in front of a live crowd that he did with. And then Bob Arum was saying, well, people have, you know, certain people that are signed to this company have contract minimums. And just because they were getting paid more than the minimum because we were able to do that, doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be able to do that moving forward. Now that a portion of that revenue stream has been taken away.
Right.
So another statement that Aaron made is, you know, fighters will be offered fights. If they don't take the fights, then we'll just go down the line. We'll just move on to the next guy. So that's going to be an issue if guys are used to making it. Like you said this before, you said if guys are used to making a amount of money, and then all of a sudden, because the live gate's not there anymore, then the pot becomes smaller, and because the pot is smaller now that the money given to the fighters is going to be smaller as well. How a fighter is going to react to that? Terrence Crawford has already stated that, you know, what he expects, and Bob Arum, what he said totally contradicts what Terrence Crawford expects. So what's going to happen?
Maybe
how's Tyson Fury going to react to this?
Maybe
now all these guys are saying this now, but you know, when the bills start coming in and they got to feed their families, what's going to happen? Will they end up knuckling under and doing what's best for the family and you know, what's best for themselves financially? Because some money is better than no money. You don't bite off your nose and spite the rest of your face. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of hardball being played here between the promoters and the fighters. It's going to be interesting to see how the whole thing plays out, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, let's think about this here for a minute. If Terrence Crawford, and again, I don't know what Terrence Crawford numbers are. Let's just state this, you know, just play this game here for a minute. If Terrence Crawford gets $3 million a fight.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
And that's in his contract. That's what I heard, too. And that's in his contract, no matter what. He gets $3 million a fight. And maybe he gets a cut of pay-per-view or whatever if that goes. But the bottom line is he gets $3 million per fight, and that is in his contract.
Yeah.
You are going to have to pay him $3 million a fight.
Correct.
Bottom line.
But again, he wants that gate money, that portion of that gate money that he was getting before. And that's just
he's not going to get that.
It's not going to be feasible.
No. And he's got to understand that. He's got to understand that.
Yeah.
If you know, you're not going to get a portion of the gate money. You know, because your gate money changes too. So, like, if you're fighting at the Madison Square Garden, or, you know, obviously you're going to have a higher gate than if you're fighting at the Madison Square Garden, the small arena, the little arena next door to it, you know, where that holds 5,000 or something like that, versus the one that holds 20,000 next door, you know. So you have to think about that.
Well, here's another dilemma. A fighter is going to turn around and say, you know, well, I'm not going to fight this guy for this amount of money, but I'll fight this guy for that amount of money. So will the fights be watered down now because of this?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be real tough to do.
Right?
Dana White had said this. I was watching his media and his press conference or whatever, his media scrum. He was saying that, you know, listen, anything can be done right now if you have the money. What it sounds like they're hoping to do, put on shows, keep everything the same. If you watch that pay-per-view last night, you really couldn't tell there was an audience. I mean, you really couldn't.
Well,
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you did miss some, but again, you know, so they're going to try to sustain for a couple of months doing what they're doing. Now, will they be able to sustain long term? No, but I think they're pushing their chips in and saying, hey, I think this is going to last for X amount of months or X amount of weeks, whatever, and then move forward.
The interesting thing, though, is not one UFC fighter is coming out and complaining about not fighting in front of a live crowd. Teofimo Lopez came out and said he doesn't want to fight in front of a fanless audience. He doesn't want to be in an arena without the fans. So he doesn't want to fight without the fans. He said that. Terrence Crawford's already coming out and complaining about money already.
You do it in a gym. I mean, you spar in a gym anyway.
Yeah.
How often
so
are you sparring in front of the crowd?
It's just funny how these UFC guys all fell in line and everything went off without a hitch last night, whereas already we're hearing rumblings about problems with the boxers and the promoters in boxing.
Honestly,
how broken boxing is.
Yeah, I really think that the UFC guys are paid fairly. I do. I mean, I think that they're paid fairly. If you ask them would they like to make more, yeah.
Everybody,
you know. But I think that they're paid fairly. I think boxers have gotten, you know, they've gotten these, you know, big paychecks for so long that, hey, listen, now is a time where, hey, look, you know, they need to, you know, they may have to give back. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. And do you?
Yeah.
And listen, if I'm getting punched in the face, trust me, I'm not giving back. You know what I mean? I'm not going anywhere. Hey, I want my money, you know?
Well, the thing is this, it's like, You only get what's in the pot. If it's not in the pot, you know, are they expecting the promoter to go into their own pocket and pay them?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Dwayne M. says, outside of hardcore boxing fans, is Terrence Crawford Does Terrence Crawford intrigue the casuals enough to demand a $3 million payday fighting in an empty arena? It doesn't. Well, let me answer this kind of two ways here. If he has it in his contract that he gets $3 million to fight, and I don't know, but if he has that in his contract, they're going to have to pay him $3
million. He's got a fight minimum in his contract.
Right.
So whatever that fight minimum is, they're going to have to pay him.
Right. If that fight minimum is $3 million, then you're getting $3
million. And he doesn't have to justify them paying
right.
him that because he signed the contract and they accepted the terms. So.
And does Crawford intrigue the casuals enough to demand $3 million? No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He just doesn't. That's the bottom line. He does not.
But I'm glad he got it. I'm glad Crawford's getting paid. I like Crawford.
I do, too. I do, too.
I like to see fighters get paid.
Crawford, I do, too.
And Crawford's the type of guy where he's not turning fights down. He's not saying, I don't want to fight this guy. I don't want to fight that guy. He's not saying that. So.
Right.
Right. He'd be the first guy that I would not want to criticize.
No, Crawford for Bob Arum, that's his biggest guy, you know.
You think Fury's his biggest guy right now?
Well, money-wise, yeah. Absolutely, money-wise.
Fury would be the biggest guy. Crawford could be number two, right?
Crawford's definitely number two. Yeah, I forgot about Fury. You're right, though.
That's fine.
Yeah. It's crazy to see, you know, we're going to see a lot of squash matches, I believe.
I agree too. I think
I really believe that. I don't think you're going to see good fights for a while.
It would be realistic to for that to happen anyways. You know, it would be reasonable for that to happen right now because these guys are coming off long layoffs, right?
Well, that's the other thing. I just read right before we came on, Triple G says he's probably not going to fight Canelo in September just because of this whole layoff thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I get that.
And I don't have anything.
I don't want to see that third fight anyway, so it doesn't really matter to me.
I don't have anything against the guy saying that.
Yeah. So, all right, let's go to the phones here. 773.
What's
you're
up,
live.
What's up, guys?
That's Chi-Town.
Turn up my number.
Chi-Town?
Yeah.
You hear me?
Is this Kevin from Chicago?
Yes, sir. How are you?
How are you, my man?
What's up, Kevy Kev?
Nothing much, guys. Good fights, glad some fights are back on. I know you guys are boxing channel, you focus on boxing, but UFC delivered. Can't be too disappointed with that card.
That was awesome, man. That really was. It was such a good card, too. Stacked from
big
top
time.
To bottom. Even the prelims were good. Even the prelims were good there.
Yeah, and I guess I'll break it down with Nagano and go work my way up. How about the guy he fought? Jarzine Rosenstruck. He's supposed to be this decorated kickboxer and this and that. If people were hyping him up, like he's some really good striker. And he backs up with his head straight up in the air, straight backwards. I mean, is this amateur hour? As you guys are boxing, you guys know
flipped.
You're boxing. I mean, you guys know that's a freaking cardinal sin right there.
Yeah. Yeah, he backed straight up and got clipped. And he backed right up to the cage and just got clipped. And, yeah, man, Ngannou's a different kind of guy, man. He's got different kind of, he's got, like, that freakish power that, and you watched Ngannou throwing punches. He didn't have the greatest technique in there either. But he knows all these, you know, like they said on the fight last night, all you got to do is clip you one time and you're going, you know. And
exactly.
That guy's a kickboxer. You knew somebody was getting KO'd.
I mean, you can't go punch. Did they not take anything away from the Stipe fight? You can't go punch or punch with this guy. You got to fight like a matador.
No.
You got to go fight like a matador. You got to tame the bull. You saw him. He doesn't have a good gas tank. But that first 2 minutes, what are you doing swinging punch or punch from him? Use your head movement. Duck and dodge. Get on the light on her feet. That dude just came in there, stood straight as a board, throwing the sloppy naked leg kick. And he got knocked out. That was just a really bad performance. Surprised he didn't show up at all. But how about the Henry Cejudo? My take with this Henry Cejudo thing is this is what they get for putting Dominic Cruz in there because Dominic Cruz should not have been in there. 3.5-year layoff. He's coming off a loss where he looked really bad. And they're trying to capitalize on Dom Cruz's past accomplishment, his name power. And he went in there, got leg kicked, and then he got knocked out. So I think, like, that's what the UFC gets for that. What do you think?
Yeah. I think so, too. I was surprised, you know, like I said, I remember Dominic Cruz 5 or 6 years ago, and that's, you know, that wasn't the guy that was going to be in there last night. And I thought Cejudo would win. I didn't think he'd make it look that easy, though. I mean, he really did. He put it on Dominic. And Dominic was arguing about that stoppage. Listen, there was nothing wrong with that stoppage. Nothing wrong with that stoppage. I mean, he was getting lit up every single round.
What did Dominic Cruz say? He said, some of these refs, they smell like alcohol and cigarettes. I think he might have been drinking or something, accusing the ref of being drunk. That's just crazy. What a crazy statement.
Yeah. I mean, hey, listen, don't get hit with those shots and we ain't got a conversation, you know?
Yeah, I didn't think it was. I thought it was a good stoppage. Maybe it could have went on a little longer, but I wouldn't want to see Dom Cruz tap dancing, doing his little, his chuck and jiving from the outside to a 5-round fight because, I mean, I respect Cruz, but you got to work your way up, man. You got to beat some of these young contenders and earn it to fight the guy, fight the champion. Like, there's so many young contenders in that division that he just kind of skipped over, which I didn't agree with. But it brings me to the main event. Justin Gaethje, I called it. I said Justin Gaethje, Tony Ferguson, his chin, he seems like he's getting hurt every fight. He's always getting rocked, and he's coming back. He managed to win. And I said he's getting up in age, and tonight's the night. The streak ends. You should have waited for the Khabib fight, and he didn't wait for it, and it backfired big time. I respect Tony Ferguson. I said the UFC did him dirty, stripping him when he got injured and making him fight these contenders when he should have been waiting, got a title shot a long time ago, and it backfired. I feel for him, but it's his own mistake for not waiting for that title fight because Justin Gaethje is dangerous. People are sleeping on him. People are sleeping on Gaethje. They said, oh, this is a walk in the park, man. Ferguson's going to walk him down and knock him out like he does everybody. No way, man. Gaethje is the real deal. I've been watching him since the World Series of Fighting days when he's fighting in the smaller promotion. And he's always been a the dude is just, he's something else. How about this?
People Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Why didn't Ferguson take him down in that fight? He didn't attempt one takedown. He attempted that little back roll or whatever where he tried to grab his leg. I mean, that's not going to get you're not going to get Gaethje like that. And Gaethje's a really good wrestler too. But I mean, why didn't he take him down?
That's not really Ferguson's game. He's not like a takedown guy. Like he has a wrestling background, but. Like, when's the last time you seen Ferguson push someone against the cage, pick him up, slam him down, control him on top? That's not really his game. His game is just walk forward, walk through punches, and wear guys down, break them with strikes, elbows, kicks, punches. Like, that's how he wins his fights. He's not really a Khabib type of guy where he takes guys down, controls them, and wins like that. So
right, but clearly he wasn't winning on the fight. And, you know, he's got a black belt from Eddie Bravo. You know, and from 10th Planet, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, man. So take that guy down and see what you can do with him. I mean, because he was getting murdered on the feet.
I agree. I would have liked to seen him shoot a double leg, at least go for it. I don't think he would have got it, but mix it up. I think really with those leg kicks, those leg kicks from Gaethje really took the spring off his front leg to be able to shoot a double leg, shoot a power leg to a power double leg. You got to put some weight on your front leg, and I just think his leg was shot. You saw him switch the stances because it was really causing him problems.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about that, those leg kicks early,
But I just think even if his leg kicks weren't there, Gaethje is such a good wrestler, All-American. He's way more credentialed than Tony Ferguson with the wrestling game. So I just think that would have been an uphill battle. But maybe trying to clinch him, wear him down, like even not get the takedown, but like even wear him down with the clinches. Don't have to get him to the ground, but wear on him. Make his arms heavy. Either way, though, I just think Gaethje came in, really good game plan. Even his boxing coach, Trevor Whitman, told him, hey, slow down. You don't have to kill him with every shot. Pick
him
apart.
Kill him. Yeah, I saw that, And you know
really
what? Because he was gassing out. That was at the second round. That was after that knockdown in the second round. And that was good advice because he was throwing, you know, bad intentions on every single shot. He's going to gas himself out.
Definitely. And that's a good question. I want to ask you guys this. What's your thoughts on attacking somebody? Because in my mind, I always thought when you have someone hurt, you don't let them off the hook. Like, I always thought that was that's how you're supposed to fight. Like, that's what I always heard. You got somebody hurt, you don't let them off the hook because you don't know if you're going to get them hurt again. But it seemed like Gaethje, he was smart about it. He even though he had him hurt, he didn't rush in and try to gas himself out. Like, even though he saw Tony Ferguson very visibly hurt, he was smart and measured about it. What's your guys' thoughts on that? I'd like to hear on Beef, too, both of you guys, because
well,
I always thought when you have someone hurt, you attack.
The thing with Gaethje is that, you know, he's lost two fights like that, where he's gone in crazy and he's been leading and he's lost two fights like that. He did a good job last night of just being patient. I think that's you're seeing a more mature Justin Gaethje out there. I think you're seeing a better trained Justin Gaethje out there because it's not like it was in the leagues before the UFC. You know, these guys, you know, a lot of times when somebody gets hurt, you know, if you're in a lower level fight, if the guy gets hurt, yeah, you jump on him. But a lot of times you don't know when these guys are hurt. You don't. They'll play possum, man. These guys are professional. They've been at it for a long time, so you really have to be careful and not go for broke every single time, because a lot of times these guys are hard to get out of there too, you know. And Beav and I talk about this all the time. You know, when you see knockout artists coming up, hey, at some point you're going to have to learn how to box, because at some point somebody is going to be able to take those shots. We talked about this with Deontay Wilder. I used to say it about Mike Tyson. Somebody is going to be able to take these shots. And when they do, what do you do? Are you able to finish the fight? Are you able to find another way to win? You know? And I think that's what Gaethje did last night. And he you know, hey, listen, man, he came back from a lot of adversity last night. That second round knockdown, Ferguson, you know, looked like he was, you know, changing momentum there, and he just would not allow it. His coach, Trevor Whitman, did a great job last night as well. Good stuff, man.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen many times in boxing when a guy, like, for instance, that Anthony Joshua, Vladimir Klitschko fight. Like, the round where Joshua hurt Klitschko, knocked him down, and Klitschko got up, and he hurt Joshua, and it looked like he almost was going to knock him out. So you got to pace yourself in there, and you got to realize when you're fighting at this level, guys have a second gear. They have a second win. You know, so I think, you know, it's all about pacing yourself. It's all about breaking a guy down and realizing that there's five rounds in the fight, and you yourself as a fighter have to go that five rounds. So if you empty out the clip in one round and there's nothing left, you know, at all later in that clip for you to unload again, then you're going to be a sitting duck for the guy later in the fight. So I think, you know, when you're at this level, you have to realize who you're in there with. You have to kind of understand that these guys can come back from adversity, because that's why they're at this level. And, you know, we obviously what he did was the right thing, because he did end up getting the stoppage anyways. But he did it in a more cerebral, a more methodical way.
Yeah.
Without putting himself in harm's way and putting himself in jeopardy of losing the fight and possibly getting knocked out himself. So I guess what he did ultimately was the right thing to do.
You know, Trevor was so concerned about Gaethje and the velocity of his punches, excuse me, him throwing those hard punches and everything like that, because what is Ferguson known for? His stamina. Everybody raves about his stamina, you know, and you don't want to go into deep water with a guy like that if your gas tank isn't full.
Yeah.
You know, that's a tough, that's a long day, man.
Now, you could still apply steady pressure to someone. It's not like if you hurt somebody, then you shouldn't just turn around and back away.
Right.
But you got to break a guy down.
Yeah, there's differences, yeah.
I almost felt like he could have got him out of there. Like, I saw him, I'm like, what are you doing, man? Put Gaethje, what are you doing? You can see Tony Ferguson, he's ready to go. Put some pressure on there and get him out of there, but I feel like at the end of the day, he did the right thing because he was just pacing himself. You don't want to go out there and empty the gas tank with Tony Ferguson, because that dude is just such a good gas tank. He could turn it around at any moment. So he really is really smart fight. But people are already bringing up, I'm going to talk about the top of the division, and saying, oh, let's do Conor versus Gaethje. No. Conor's got work to do. I know he's a big star, but if it was, in my opinion, he should be fighting maybe someone like Dustin Poirier, even one of these young, one of these up-and-comers like Dan Hooker. Gaethje's been putting in work. First-round knockout over Edson Barboza, and now he's just finished Ferguson the way he did, and Conor's just going to come out of nowhere, skip the line, and fight Gaethje. That's what makes me mad about the sport, where popularity, you're just going to jump the line like that. I think Gaethje
I heard they can't do McGregor anyway. I heard that they're probably not going to be able to do McGregor anyway because they can't put him out without an audience. He said that's like, anywhere from $15 to $18 million gate for McGregor. They can't do that. It's almost, that's too much money. He said he garners too much money to come out there and just do an empty arena. Can't do that with him.
Yeah.
Just like Canelo.
Right. I heard that
they
too.
Can't
that
do an empty
sense.
Arena with Canelo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
it's true.
All right, Kevin,
so
we're gonna get
think?
Moving, man. Thank you so much for the call. Go ahead, one more question.
One last point, the styles wise,
yeah.
Because I think this is interesting because I feel like Dustin Poirier, he's at the top of the division. That was just a tough matchup for Gaethje because he got real crisp boxing. I think Conor McGregor, he's another guy, he's a tough matchup for Gaethje. But Khabib, he was just the, it's like, it's all about style. It's all about style, especially when they add in the wrestling. Khabib able to take guys down. It's interesting. But I think when it comes to Gaethje versus Khabib, I think Gaethje poses the most problems for Khabib with his wrestling background, his ability to scramble, his ability to stuff takedowns. It's interesting, that little triangle at the top there. I want to get your guys' opinions on the matchup and the styles, but I'll leave you to it. Thanks for taking my call.
Sounds good, man. Thank you so much. As far as Gaethje and Khabib, I think that's a very good fight. I think that Gaethje has a really good, like you said, a really good wrestling background as well. The problem is that Khabib, if he wants you down, he'll get you down. I haven't seen somebody yet that he's not going to be able to take down. But if he's not able to take him down, that's a problem. And that's a big problem. Because I firmly believe that Gaethje definitely has the edge in stand-up in that fight question. Let's see here. Georgie, who's been going on in the chat about how he's going to take it down tonight. Georgie.
Hey, yo, what's happening, people? Yo, let's put the positive first. She sounded amazing. The UFC, I don't even miss the crowd. Fuck them. That shit sounded great. You can see, you can hear the punches, how it lands. You know, like sometimes you say, yeah, that shit how he landed. He didn't have no effect. He just brushed it over. But now when you hear these punches really landing, you see it's more convincing. That was beautiful. Love it. But the main thing I'm about to take from the UFC is this. When you see any of these cocksuckers on boxing, for $500,000, put the effort that Ferguson supposed last night. When was the last time you see a motherfucker on boxing for $500,000 put that fucking effort?
Got a point. Can't hate on it. He's got a point.
You came with the fire today, Bray.
I can't even argue
listen,
with it.
Listen.
Come with the fire.
Listen. What happened when they announced the winner? What he did with the strap? What he did with the strap? He grabbed that shit and threw it on the floor. And what he said? I want the real shit. When was the last time that happened in boxing? Anybody?
Real people do real things, Georgie. That's how it is. That's how it is, baby.
So I don't want to hear nobody here coming talking about how these people are going to get paid. I don't want to hear no so-called boxing fan talking about how these people need to get paid. Ridiculous. The fuck is going? Going against your own motherfucking interest. One second. Buddy, now we got to fight these goddamn mafias. And then you want motherfuckers talking about these people got to get paid. These motherfuckers are overpaid. What about the radio company? Are you following me here, bro?
Okay, Georgie. Okay, Georgie.
All right, Georgie.
Be okay.
Like it's
bro! It's on your face. It's smacking you left and right. And you want to go to these motherfuckers who don't mix it up. They mix it up every 2 or 3 fucking years with their bullshit setups. And here you are talking about they got to get paid. For who? The PVC bottle kings flipping cars and fucking drinking to death? That's who got to get paid? Fuck out of here. Well, pretty much that's my call. Gotta go. See you guys later.
It's like that at Rikers now. Oh, good Lord. I love Georgie's calls, but you can't understand half of it. You know, like he'll start, but he did make a good point. Tony Ferguson last night for $500,000. Yeah, he put it all out there, man. He took a lot of shots. Area code 516, you're live.
It's Jesse.
Yeah.
Is he sleeping?
I guess. That's
I just don't get it.
I don't get it. Jason said, Warden said bedtime. Oh, my goodness. All right, let's talk about real quick here. Mayweather claims he will not fight anymore. Mayweather did an interview with Floyd Hype. He said that he's done with boxing. He will only fight exhibitions, not any boxers. So there was a fight being tossed around, him and Adrian Broner. I never saw any, like, documentation on this or anything like that. It was all rumor. But he's done. He said he won't fight any boxers in the exhibition either. So, like, I mean, he may fight guys like McGregor or fight guys like, you know, Tenshin or something, but no real boxers.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's done. Mike Tyson returning. Man, we had a show about this earlier in the week. Mike Tyson has been offered $20 million. By bare knuckle boxing to fight. All this stems from a 5-second video where he's hitting the pads at 53 years old. You know, I mean, he's 53 years old, man. I mean, does anybody think like his timing and stuff has improved since his last loss to Kevin McBride? You know, I mean, come on, man. No, don't do it, man. But I tell you, with a possible return, a flood of retired boxers have talked about coming back, including James Toney, Riddick Bowe, Evander Holyfield. B, why do these guys think it's a good idea to come back? I don't understand. Like, what? I don't get, like.
It's hard to let go, man.
Got to let it go, right? It's done.
It's hard to let go.
It has to be, man. It's done.
I was driving by basketball courts, and I was just having dreams of when I used to be able to play basketball. I can't even run up and down the court anymore. My knees are so bad.
You were never really that good, though. I got to be honest.
But at least I can run up and down the court. Now I can't even run up and down the court.
Yeah, I mean,
I was never good. Don't make no mistake about it. I was never good.
Did you hurt your knees on the bench? How did that work? I mean, what happened? No, I'm asking. I don't know.
If I tell you how I originally hurt my knee the first time, you'll friggin' laugh your ass off. I was playing. I hurt my knee playing touch football in the street when I was 14 years old. This was the beginning. This was the beginning of the end. You know what happened?
The beginning of the end.
There was oil. There was oil on the street. And my leg slipped, and I tried to stop myself, and it just went like boom. Just tore my ACL, right? In 1984, before they even had the procedure of doing ACL restructuring.
You tore your ACL?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because my foot slipped on oil. And it just like kind of like my leg just went like my foot went one way and my leg went like my just like this, boom, just like that. It was just crazy. And at that time they didn't do ACL reconstructions, so
that sucks,
all I did was they scoped it out and I had a torn ACL for the rest of my life.